We can see. So good. Well, it's still good morning here on the Mountain Time Zone, but also good afternoon. Those of you that are in other locations, I'm Anna Hunsinger, coming to you from cold Denver, Colorado, the Internet 2 offices. So welcome. I'm the VP of Community Engagement. And I have the great pleasure to not just welcome, but to set the stage for our first Internet 2 Inclusivity Initiative webinar series. Today, I am so honored that I get to introduce and share with you not just a very good personal friend, a mentor, but a colleague, and just such a personality and wonderful person that you will get to meet for a little bit. Just very, very quick, many of you are familiar with the Internet 2 Inclusivity Initiative. Sorry for all the background noise. Denver is just going crazy today, but I'll be quick. The Internet 2 Inclusivity Initiative is something that, quite frankly, a shared passion and commitment across the research and education community. Just because we have the Internet 2 name there, this is a partnership approach with many organizations that care about inclusivity and diversity in our community. Important thing to say is that we recognize across the board the need to strengthen available technical resources in the broad research, science, and academic communities, and to ensure that we're responsive to the needs of our interconnected world and where we're going. So our initiative focuses resources, attention, and scholarships to improve gender diversity and inclusion in the community of the networking and technical professionals that we work with. As part of this initiative, we also aim at providing opportunities to have discussions, share best practices to improve diversity and inclusion in the technical fields, particularly in advanced networking, security, and identity, and other areas relevant to what we do at Internet 2. We also partner with other national organizations that are doing similar work, such as the National Center for Women in IT, EDUCAUSE, the WINS program, and so on. Today, I welcome all the Internet 2 staff and all the people from the broader Internet 2 community that are joining us. And I would like to now introduce our featured speaker today. And I would very much encourage all of you to Google the name Avis Yates Rivers, so you can get a better sense of this wonderful person. But real quick, Avis is the president and CEO of Technology Concepts Group International, LLC, which is a global asset expense and procurement management firm. She has more than 35 years of general management experience in the information technology industry and has been a successful tech entrepreneur for over 30 years. One of the things that I love about Avis is how she thinks about service also. Looking at one of her bios, she's a big believer on that ideal that service is the rent you pay for the privilege of living on this earth. And she subscribes to both the principles and the practice of being in service. She's a longtime advocate for the increased participation of girls, women, and people of color in technology, and has served in many leadership positions for national and not-for-profit organizations over the years. She's a nationally recognized thought leader and in-demand global speaker. She has a book that, if you haven't seen, I would strongly recommend you take a look and try to get it. Avis, you can remind us, but I think it's in Amazon now, so you can definitely get that one there as well. This first book, Necessary Inclusion, was released in January 2017. You can read a little bit more on her website, avisyatesrivers.com. So I think we should now just say to you, Avis, and let you talk. We have planned for an hour, so Avis will go through a presentation, and then we will open up the floor for questions and discussion. So thank you, everybody.
Well, Anna, thank you once again for having me. It's an honor, whenever I get invited to an Internet 2 event You know, if I can make it, I'm going to be there, mostly because of you, Anna. You know, you have been a good friend and colleague for many years and have opened some doors for me, especially in spreading the word. You know, my goal is just to broaden the conversation around the complexity of the issues with women in tech. There's too few of us, and the ones who are there, you know, we typically will leave the tech profession by the time we reach mid-career. Over half of you will do that, is what the statistics tell us. And so we at the National Center for Women in IT, or NCWIT, have been working for almost 15 years to try to correct that. We want to understand why women are leaving. We know what the answers are to a great degree, and we are sharing that data on the website for free. Lots of resources of what to do in the meantime, how to combat unconscious bias, and those tips and techniques to help you to work in a supervisory relationship that may be less than ideal, right? So I'm going to share my screen, and hopefully you can all see it. Want to share some data with you. Talitha, let me know if you can see my screen.
Yep, we're good.
All right, I'll go into presentation mode so that you can see it, although so that I can see it without glasses. Never mind you guys, I need to see it without glasses. And so as Anna has mentioned, the title of my book is Necessary Inclusion, and I go around the world talking about why including women and people of color in the invention of technology is not just a nice thing to do, a socially responsible thing to do. It's a necessary and critical thing to do if an organization is going to succeed at competing at the global level. And so we have a problem in the U.S. tech workforce. I know this is not news to any of you, but I thought I'd share with you some of the data points. Right now, as you know, women comprise over half of the U.S. professional workforce, yet we still only hold about a quarter of all U.S. technology jobs. And so why is that? You know, where are the rest of the women in the tech workforce? We're basically absent. When we drill down to the very core of coding and software development and engineering and architecture, we're now down to about 19% of all software jobs in the U.S. being held by women. And then when you think about leadership in this space, right, think chief information officer or chief technology officer or vice president of research and development, product marketing and management, there's only 5% of women who hold those types of leadership roles in IT. And we know that from our research that a lot of the times if women can't see themselves in roles to which they would like to aspire, they're not going to join or stay at that organization. So it's important to see women and people of color in the highest levels of the organization. It really does send a strong signal. And when I overlay race and gender to those statistics, they get even worse. So we know that Blacks and Hispanics comprise about 16% of the U.S. professional jobs, but they comprise 30% of the overall U.S. population. So there's a big problem there as well. Black and Hispanic men hold about 9% of all U.S. computing jobs, and Black and Hispanic women about 4%. Collectively, Latinas 1%, and Black women 3%. And so this is a huge problem, and it's a so what question that I like to answer right about now. So what? The tech that's being invented is stupendous, it's phenomenal, but it is very homogenous in the way that it is brought about and the way that it is designed. So if you think about the technology that if we left home without it, we'd go back and get, understandably, but imagine how much better, deeper, richer it could be if there were diverse team members looking at problems to be solved from a number of different ways not just a homogenous or all the same type of people looking at it the same way. And that's where innovation comes from. It's when you approach problems from diverse perspectives. And we bring a lot more to the table than just gender, because I talk about intersectionality. And what that word really just means is that lots of us are what I call doubly blessed, women and people of color. But there's a lot of other points to the intersectionality puzzle. And each one of those points, meaning that we're carrying multiple identities or roles, each one of those roles and points of identity can bring innovation to a particular problem. So if you look at this slide where you see the different points that I'm talking about, you see gender and race, of course, but there's also class in some countries, there's ethnicity, there's spirituality, there's age, right? There's a lot of baby boomers there who are working in tech workforces with millennials and Gen Xers and Ys. So there's a very strong multi-generational workforce at play today. And every one of them kind of thinks a little bit differently, right? There are those who are differently abled. A lot of people call it disabled, but I like to refer to it as differently abled, right? We may rely on other gadgets in order to see, hear, get around, and feel. So when you think about the fact that women are dramatically absent and women of color are dramatically absent, when you overlay this intersectionality, it really becomes a deeper issue. And that issue is keeping us from reaching the heights of innovation and tech that we're capable of getting to. And if we as a country don't get there, don't figure it out, be clear that other countries will. Because when I travel abroad, especially over into East Asia, every child is learning computing or some part of computing, every child, right? Whereas in the US, very few school districts require computing as a requirement for graduation. I remember when I graduated from New York City Public High School a little bit ago, I had to show a proficiency in the swimming pool and pass a swimming test, or else I could not graduate from high school, no matter what my grades said. Swimming. We lived in the middle of the borough of Queens. We had no swimming pool, as, you know, humble beginning of a blue collar family of parents. We weren't going to swim in the East River or the Hudson River. But if I couldn't pass swimming, I could not graduate from high school. Today, we're not making those same demands of our young people to prepare them adequately for the 21st century. Too few school districts around the country. Check yours and see what whether or not having a proficiency in computing or computer science of some type is a requirement for graduation. I'd love to hear from you on that. So when you think about intersectionality, the subtle everyday dynamics of who we are and what we bring to the workforce, they add up. This is why women leave, because they'll get to a point where they figure, I'm not being valued for my whole authentic self. My contribution isn't being valued, and so therefore I will leave. A lot of people think that they're leaving the tech or the workforce in general to go home and start families and care for aging parents. There's some of that, but 75% of those who leave either start their own company or go to another company or go to another department or business unit within the same company, they're leaving a very bad supervisory relationship. That's why they're leaving. And so I wonder how many of you have experienced having to provide more evidence of your competence than others, than men, to prove yourself. If you look at the chart here, 77% of Black women have said that they have had to do that. And that has always been, as a Black woman, I can tell you, that has always been a recurring theme in our culture is that we have to be twice as good. We have to demonstrate that we have to be twice as good to have a level playing field. And you see the responses are very high for Latinas, for Asians, and for white women. So for women in general, we have to demonstrate a level of competence in order to be accepted. And then at work, that women find themselves pressured to play a stereotypically feminine role. You find that more prevalent in the Asian cultures than you do in the Black cultures or the Latina cultures. But these are what the research says. And then women have been mistaken for either the administrative or the custodial staff. And look at the responses of the women who've experienced this. 48% Black, 48% women, Latina. And so these subtle dynamics really begin to add up. And women will just reach a point where this is not where I need to be. And I always say, if you're not being valued, you're not where you're supposed to be. But these are really interesting statistics, and they really add up. And so Anna told you a little bit about me, but this is my why. This is my why. And I'd like to point out the difference between equality, where everybody is assumed to be at the same level and get the same support. That's that first panel, equality. Everybody has the same box, even though one person clearly, that one box is not helping them to be at the same level of just being able to see this what's going on the other side of that fence. Equity in the middle is where each person gets the support they need to be at the same level. Their heads about are all at the same level, but to get there, the one in the middle needed one box, but the one on the right needed two boxes, and it's okay. That's the support that person needs for whatever reason to get to the same place. But the box on the right is the reality. That's where we are. Those that have get more because they have access to more. Those who do not have typically get a lot less. And so they're going to remain at a disadvantage pretty much for their whole life unless something changes or someone intervenes. Equity is what we are striving for. This issue about the lack of women and people of color in tech is an equity issue. And so that's what the problem that we're trying to solve. So equity, justice, and fairness is why I get on a plane every 2 days and go without sleep and go when people call and want me to broaden the conversation within their organization, because it's important to me to make sure that I can lend my voice in whatever capacity to bring about fairness, equity, and justice. And technology, the reason why I strongly encourage girls and women all over the country to consider an education and a career in technology is because it's a huge enabler. It can level the playing field. It can generate wealth and jobs in underserved communities. It can curb things like hunger and homelessness and hopelessness. The reason we have civil uprisings when injustice is seen and perceived is because of hopelessness and just the continual feel of being added to, dumped on. And then you reach a point where the explosion happens. Ferguson, Baltimore, when Black men have been shot in the streets, seemingly always unarmed. You reach a point of hopelessness where there's an eruption. So women and people of color have historically had limited access to technology. And diversity of thought, as I've said before, is what we so look for to drive innovation. So this is my why. This is a little snapshot of all of my intersectionality. I'm a wife, a mother, a grandmother, a sister, an auntie, a cousin, you know, and my grandsons would be horrified if they saw Spidey and Bumblebee because they're now taller than I am and they talk in a deep voice. But that's still my favorite picture of those two grandsons. And so an avid golfer, a Hollywood hobnobber, all of those things, and an NC WIT spokesperson for the increase of women in tech with my red chair that I go around the country in. So all of those are my points of intersectionality and a lot more. Been an advocate for a long, long time. This happens to be 1987, January 15th, Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. I was on the steps of the Supreme Court with a bunch of men advocating and actually protesting because the Supreme Court was going to hear that very next day this case about a large majority construction company was not happy that a county in Richmond, a county in Virginia, in Richmond, the city of Richmond, had awarded a contract to a diverse firm based on the fact that they felt they could do the work and that they were diverse. And it would be a help for them and a help for all involved. And the case went all the way to the Supreme Court. And that was the beginning of the dismantling of affirmative action programs around the country. In public contracting, government, in schools and universities, just one by one, those affirmative action programs were being dismantled. This was the cornerstone, the first one. And I was there to advocate. And so that's always been my goal, is to drive for equity. So Honest told you about my book. It can be found on avisyatesrivers.com. It can be found on Amazon and your choice of paperback or hardcover. But if you do order it from Avis Yates Rivers, I promise to sign it for you and before sending it off. So what do we have to do? What do we have to do to change this dynamic, to start seeing more women and other intersections of people at the design table, having the jobs that are harder and have the jobs that are leading to the architecting and engineering and developing of solutions? We've got to fix the system. It's the culture that keeps this dynamic in play right now. We've got to have leadership, and that's what I applaud Internet 2 about over and over and over again. They are having this conversation at their conferences, at the global conferences. I was invited to Portugal. Maybe some of you were in the audience, were there to speak at that conference, thanks to Internet 2. Leadership means standing up for what's right and taking action. And in this case, it means that we are going to be more conscious of the biases that live within all of our organizations, be they unconscious or conscious, and that we're going to have to stop them in their tracks. When we hear things that are not helping or that are derogatory or that are unconsciously not malintended, but just because it's been someone's experience that white men should do that job, and so Joe or Jim should be considered for that next stretch assignment instead of Anna or Talitha. Somebody has to stop that and say, well, I disagree. And that's where leadership comes in. Lord knows we need more female leaders in this world. There's so much going on in the world, in the country of the US, that we need more female leaders who lead differently and who can bring about change. But men still have a critical role to play because you're still sitting in 97% of these positions. And so without men advocating and being male allies and doing things specifically, and if you want to know what those specific things are, NC WIT has studied men, and we do have a report out on the top 10 strategies that male allies can utilize to continue to grow their advocacy for women and people of color in tech. You can find those resources at ncwit.org/resources. So lots of stuff going on. You hear about STEM programs here, there, everywhere. Lots of activity, lots of talk in the news. Lots of companies are doing things like, oh, I don't know, adopting a high school over here, or doing a summer camp or an after school coding something over here. lots of noise, but they're episodic, they're programmatic, they're having limited local and regional impact. What we need to turn this dynamic around is for everybody, as much as possible, to coalesce under the national umbrella of NCWIT, because that's where national impact happens. And so it is time to close the gender gap. And we know the things that will work, because NCWIT is a research organization. That's all a team of social scientists do every day, is to drill into the issues. They're complex, and we're doing it across the entire pipeline of kindergarten, K through 12, all the way through careers. And so there is things that work. We know what they are, and we want to replicate those promising practices, toolkits, et cetera, across the broader spectrum so that we can see this needle moving. And all of those resources are free at ncwit.org. So the bottom line is, we have to do, all of us have to do what we each can to break down the barriers that's holding back women and people of color from the all aspects of technology. And when we do have women involved, we can't just have them all in single areas such as business analyst or project manager or QA. Those are very important roles, but they have become increasingly female dominated. And you still have the hard coding and architecture and engineering jobs being held by men. So it's important to know that this is not just a numbers game, but if you want to show real change and achieve real change, we've got to get women involved in every aspect of technology. So there's things that you can do. There's things that we all can do. Yes, we need organizational change, but we are all members of organizations. It's not going to change by itself. And the larger it is, the longer it takes to change. So what is it that you can do? We have answers for that as well in those resources. There's tips on being a supervisor of technical women. There's tips for women themselves. And we take the perspective that women aren't broken. We don't need remedial help. What we need is access to opportunities. Same thing I've been talking about for over 30 years for diverse firms, those owned by women of people of color and women. Same thing. Affirmative action was utilized for a particular purpose, and that was to right past wrongs. Think about equity, that equity panel. Because of past wrongs, people are starting off at different levels. It's okay to bring the resources to the table to help everybody get to the same place. So what can you do in your organization to do that? Can't think about, well, I'm only one person, or this problem is too big. There's really nothing that I can do. There's limits to what my organization will allow me to do. Well, we need to stop thinking that way. We need to get it in our minds that, in fact, in my mind, I think about that every day when I'm riding down the highway and I see a speed limit sign and it says speed limit 65. I'm like, oh, okay, that's a guideline. I'll work in, through, around, beyond the guideline, but it's a guideline. I'm being silly. It's a speed limit. And if you go over it, you have run a chance of being penalized because of it. But just want you to think beyond what limits, perceived or real, you think exist. Because in my mind, the only thing that's limiting us in life is the belief that there are limits. To have been a successful CEO of a tech firm for 33 years, I had to stop believing in limits or allowing anyone to limit me and what I'm capable of achieving. Because when you think about my humble beginnings, one of six children born to two blue-collar, working-class, uneducated parents who decided to leave Augusta, Georgia, where I was born, my father's hometown, when I was one, and move us, have the guts to move us to New York City And my parents were married when they were teenagers. And when my mother had me, she was just 19, but I was third. And they proceeded to have six more once we reached New York. And for my to watch my father continue to his education as he cared for this large and growing family just really cemented in my mind that nobody can hold you back if you're intended to move forward. So when I had to start college, it was community college. I'm a New York City public school girl. No money. And there's lots of others like me. It wasn't a lack of ability that started me off that educational path. It was a lack of resources, finances, access. But I didn't allow that to frame the rest of my life. And so you have to bust through the limits. Because a lot of times, women especially, we are our own worst enemy. We minimize and diminish our contribution. We like to give everybody, this was the team, you know, the credit. And we need to really let our voice be heard. Let our contributions be known and bring our total genuine self to the organization at which you work. So there are no limits in life, nothing but the sky. And we all can soar and bring others along with us. And if nothing else, when I'm finished this work, if I can just know that I was responsible for helping someone else break through their limits and achieve limitless success, then I will have considered it a life well lived. So I appreciate Anna and Internet 2 having me today. These are the ways that you can get in touch with me. Would love to hear from you. And when I speak, I usually hear from women in the audience just for hours afterward, just telling me their story. Now, I say that. I'm on airplanes every other day. And so I just encourage you to connect with me, share with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, email. Those are the best ways. The book is full of a lot of the information, lots more detail that I talked about today. It does have my life story woven through it. And I didn't want to just write another story about somebody's life. We all have one. Why is mine any more interesting than yours? It's an easy, quick read. It's not a textbook, but it does tell you in detail why we're in this position. What does the research say we can all do about it to get out of this and get off into a new paradigm? So thank you again, Anna, and I'm going to turn it back over to you and Delita. I'll stop sharing my screen.
Avis, thank you. You know, in a week that has, year, and I'll get to the questions in a minute, that has been very interesting, challenging, you know, against the landscape of what's happening. Thank you for bringing a little bit of inspiration, a lot of inspiration and hope. And, you know, I personally feel very moved. So really appreciate you joining us today and sharing what you have shared. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna.
All right. I have a number of questions queued up, some of which have come from our virtual participants. So we should kind of call on them, see if any one of them would want to speak up first. What we could do is just, I know some of you may have more than the questions that you put on the chat window. Either go ahead and put them on the chat window, or if you're in the Internet to staff, you can send Talitha a note and then we can queue them up as well. Those of you that are joining us from outside the Internet to staff, please just bear with us in case anybody wants to talk, just speak up. So that then, and then we'll take turns on that. So why don't we open up the mics and see if anybody would like to go first.
Hi, ladies. This is Deidre. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Deidre.
Thanks for taking time out of your schedule. Really enjoyed your presentation.
Thank you.
I know you can't see me, but I tried to connect with you on LinkedIn not too long ago.
Okay.
One of the problems that I've been having, don't get me wrong, I'm not definitely not a rebel without a cause, mm-hmm. but there's a fine line between being able to break down a barrier and or address a problem or make it known, and it being seen as too aggressive or you being a troublemaker, and you're either going to get retaliated against openly or you're going to retaliate against in subtle ways. And I've dealt with that on multiple fronts, and I've learned over the years, there's a way to finesse those types of situations.
Mm-hmm.
I think there needs to be more resources about how to manage that, because when you're in a position, so for example, me personally, I work in information security. That's one of those areas where you hardly see women, right?
Yes.
I'm in a more techie field area, for lack of a better phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a lot of resistance there when you broach the conversation with people about, are you aware that women are on the decline in IT? Are you aware, of this issue? Even with people who you would think would be concerned, because if you're not concerned as a person that's working, you have daughters. You know what I mean? Because I do know that I have a knack for getting people's attention or for making that connection, just because I've had to do security awareness and training. So
mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing is even having enough of the soft skills and being able to do things in a proper way, you still have to be able to, not that I don't have tough skin, but you also don't want to, lose your bread and butter is what I'm saying.
You don't want to get fired, Jess.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So we still need a way to navigate that appropriately. And obviously, know how to pick your battles,
mm-hmm.
because you want to develop a pipeline which is what I feel like I'm led to do. That's why I keep trying to stay engaged with Internet 2 and this particular initiative.
Mm-hmm.
You want to develop a pipeline where you have not just women, but men as well. So that whoever's yes. coming through this pipeline gets the support and sees that there is support, not just from women, but from men,
right.
And men of all colors, frames of reference and things and so on.
So your
question is,
mm-hmm.
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to just get to your question and say, I think I hear you. I hear this a lot, you can imagine. And so I think your question is, what are some of the techniques can you use in order to join the conversation but not alienate and not be colored as that angry blank fill in the blank woman and the repercussions that can come as a result of that? And so, data is a universal language, and I would get the talking points from NCWIT. There's talking points on a number of different subjects. These are all soft, downloadable, shareable. You can bring down some of this information and brand it and then share it within your organization or your leadership, right? If it's not real prevalent in the organization, it's because it hasn't come down from leadership. And so presenting data or presenting ideas that are good for the organization, as opposed to that they're good for women. Because all of this social science research has shown and borne out that these things that organizations can do to become more welcoming for women are equally as good for men. And so mm-hmm. to approach it from an organizational improvement and strategic direction kind of perspective is very helpful. It's hard when you're deep in the woods and you're surrounded by naysayers. It's hard to really get an impact happening around you. You have to just break out of that and go somewhere else. And I advocate starting with leadership, even just writing a blog or sending out some information from talking points, which are very concise, you know, did you know, start a did you know series. And you know, just, it's not going to take one conversation. It's going to take a recurring theme. That's why Fifth Avenue marketing companies are in such demand, because even the campaigns that they do are campaigns. They're not single attempts to go to the market. So you have to start devising what your campaign should be consisting of, who should the audience be, and then just start dripping that information. And again, you don't have to make it up. Please don't make it up. Please go to the evidence-backed resources that are free and just an easy download to use those. You can rebrand it, but you know, there's things, specific things that you can do.
Okay. So I think what I'm hearing is where I've kind of lost the mark. I started this back in 2014. I haven't received as much retaliation as I thought I would have. I've seen others, and I'm trying to avoid that, but I think what I'm hearing is that I need to play the long end game. Because I reached out to a lot of my mentors and contacts back then. I've, you know, done it sporadically. But, you know, I've had to divide my attention between that and also further my career. Because 2014, I got a CISSP, an MBA, and things like that, and tried to stay in this field. So I understand where I need to go. That was some awesome advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deirdre. Thank you for joining us today.
Other questions? I know, Nick, you may have a question.
Yeah. Hi, Avis.
Hi, Nick.
It's great to hear you speak again. I've seen you before. I got a copy of your book and you signed it. And so it's always exciting to hear you speak. It helps energize.
Thank you.
And it's really good to hear about some of these resources. And one of the things that so I need to go and look at the Male Allies resources that you'd mentioned so I can be more aware and better prepared. And one of the things that I've wondered about is about how much of this higher education community, and like Deirdre had mentioned, the information security community, which is something I know a lot about, and I know that it's a little bit different in information security, but how much do you think is specific to higher ed, or is it broader community? And then I've got a second part of my question around the resources and creating awareness of I wonder about when me as a white male, and I try to engage on this because I think it's really important. Am I taking an opportunity away from someone else to take a leadership position?
That's a good question. And let me start with the first one first about whether this is more prevalent in the educational community. Each community is different. It's equally bad in all of the different communities, whether it's post-secondary or university, whether it's workforce, whether it's K-12, which is why we have to do the research and have alliances built around each of those communities, because they're all looking at different issues, but sometimes it's the same issue. So for example, for universities, and you know, NCWIT has the Academic Alliance, and hundreds of universities work together to try and do a couple of things. And one is to increase their outreach and bring more women and underrepresented minorities in. And number two is to change the way they introduce students to computing, right? Because it was very off-putting. Who would want to do that? Nobody, not women, not men. And so they've been working together to it's all about the culture, changing the culture. And that culture is different in each of the segments of the pipeline. And for corporations, what they have to do is change culture within. And if you're working for a large organization, it takes longer and can be more difficult because they've just been in existence for so long and things are so ingrained. And for you, Nick, as well as for Deirdre, you can't change a large culture overnight, right? And if you think back to the genesis of some of these organizations, who were they built by and for? They were built by white men for white men, because that's who was in the workforce when they were built. And so that's why unconscious bias is so rampant, and it's such a big buzzword these days because things just happen because they've always happened that way. No one's stopped to take a look of, well, whether that is an effective way to continue to do something because of the dynamics of the workforce today. And so it takes, that's why the white males like yourself is such a critical component to culture change, because you're sitting in the seats of leadership. You have access that others may, like Deirdre, may not. And you can speak up to thwart unconscious bias whenever you hear it, encounter it, etc. So, for example, in meetings, you know, engage the quiet voices. This is what male allies do and what we all can do. You know, the men are just going to be more innately verbose and aggressive in trying to talk and get their ideas across. And so what do we do as women? We do the same things we used to do back in grade school, where the boys would go, oh, me. We would just sit back there with the answer in our head and just let them go for it. So the same kinds of things just continue on. We just get older with these things, but they're still ingrained in us. So engage the quiet voices. Advocate for women being chosen for a new task assignment. Question, how are tasks assigned anyway? How is performance evaluate it anyway? You know, again, that they've been doing things the same way a lot of times, or they may have changed over the years, but they're still coming from that same homogenous mindset. And so there's lots of things that you can do and that we all can do, because what we learned about men is that they want a sense of fairness from the personal side of them. They want the sense of fairness because they have wives and daughters and mothers and nieces and sisters and et cetera, and they want them to be treated fairly. And once you know how the challenges that women encounter, you don't want that for your personal connections and personal circle. And so sometimes that motivates them. Or on the professional side, you may have had a female leader at one point, and you saw all that she had to go through, which had nothing to do with the job, but going back to my original stats, to just demonstrate her competence over and over and over again, and well beyond where men would typically have to go. Because the more senior you get in an organization, your competence becomes a given. And then your character is being called into question. And we saw that just recently in the Supreme Court and other things that I don't want this to turn into. But, you know, it's not so much the competence at the most senior levels of the organization now. It's the character. And so what is our character? What is our integrity known to be in an organization? And how can we help others to come along by advocating for times? You're sitting in meetings and in rooms where we are not. And if you don't advocate for us in that room, then it just continues on the same way that it always has. So thanks, Nick. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I saw some things in chat.
Other questions? Hey, Miss, I'd like to ask you a question as people think about some other ones. Thank you for bringing, the work that male allies can help. You mentioned leadership. Mm-hmm. So can you, what are other components, to make an organization transform itself to? And, you know, I wonder if you could say, I know NC Whit talks a little bit about the, systemic model, where it's not just, you know, from the top leadership, from the ground across, in between. Mm-hmm. It'd be great to know also if you could share a little bit more. So how does that work? I mean, of course, like you said, leadership starts with leadership too. Mm-hmm. It starts also with the awareness of biases. Can you comment a little bit more? What are some other components? What may be the roles for an HR organization in this, in addition to all these other things?
Good question, Anna. And yes, I'd love to. The systemic model that our social scientists devised is a big circle. And there's about a dozen different components in how they intersect and interact with one another. But HR is a huge part of that big circle because that is the place for people and advocating for people, ensuring that the workforce has the requisite tools that it needs, right? Whether it be training, whether it be coaching, like how many of your organizations engage coaches? And not just for the executives, but what about for a level of people who have the potential to reach into the executive leadership at some point? Coaching at that level is invaluable. Right. And so that's another place. Also, HR can do a couple of things. For example, I'm a hiring manager and I want to fill some critical tech roles. As the HR person responsible for providing candidates to that hiring manager, I would not do that unless I had a diverse slate. As a hiring manager, male or female, I would not accept a slate of candidates from HR that was not diverse. And I don't mean a token one, I mean a full diverse slate of candidates. So that's one way that HR can help to drive diversity in the tech workforce. Another one is to take a look at their instruments that they're using. So you know that there's such a thing as gendered language. And the way you actually go out to the marketplace to post job offerings and job wanted ads, there's ways that can totally turn off women and people of color. Seems innocuous, you know, but there are words that are used that are gendered toward men. So as an example, we're looking for a hard charging dynamo, hardworking, blah, 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 blah. You know, all of these excellent type characteristics. Women wouldn't even apply for that. Would not apply. Same thing with diverse candidates. There are words that can be used that they would just say, nope, not the place for me. And you know, our tech workforce is shrinking tremendously. And so your ability to each compete for the very few skilled resources that are on the market or that can move, you know, it's going to become increasingly difficult. It's tight. You're going to have to pay them more. As an HR person, make your first offer your best offer. Don't start a relationship in haggle mode. You know, now I'm the chief negotiator. I'm not going to do that with people. I'm going to do that with products and services, but not with people. Make your first offer your best offer and let them know that this is the best offer and we value your candidacy and we really want to engage you. And so I'm coming with you to you with the best possible offer that we can have, that we can make at this time. Question, as I said before, HR, question these performance evaluation. How are they devised? If they're not steeped in social science, you need to toss them out and revamp them. And that's another thing that NCWIT social scientists do. They serve as personal trainers. They will come out. They will review your one ads wording. They will review your performance appraisal instruments. And they'll make recommendations for how to improve on them for both men and women and people of color and others. You know, others. Orientation, differently abled others. So there's a lot that we have learned over the last 14 years at NCWIT. And by the way, that's not my day job, folks. If I'm promoting them a lot, it's because I have seen the impact that they are having. And there's no reason to go it alone. None. They make these things available to all. So the resources and the research that are done to produce the resources on ncwit.org site are federally funded. That's why they're free for all. So please make use of them. They can really help you in bringing about culture change in whatever type of organization you have, especially young, smaller organizations. We want you to get your culture right from the start, because you can see how hard it is to change after the fact. So hope that helped.
It definitely does. Thank you.
Anna, it's Erin. Sure, I don't know if there's another question out there. I will step aside if there is.
No, see, stop that. Stop okay. that. Ask your question, girl. This is your time.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you. This has been really great. And of course, having Anna here at Internet too is super helpful, because she is a voice that is kind of helping us step towards becoming a better place for diverse candidates and women and, you know, differently mm-hmm. abled individuals. But it's a little overwhelming, right? We try and meet every month or every other month, and we try and talk about what can we do, what's next. And it's overwhelming to think like, what, there's so many aspects, right? You just said like the different HR ones, there's leadership, there's been allies. Are there like two or three or even one where like most impactful, like, cause you can have like fatigue, right? Like what, oh, so many absolutely. Different areas to address, like, What do you see as like two, what are the top two, like, you can do this, it's manageable, and this can definitely have an impact on like where you work currently?
Yeah. I would say, and I was teasing you when you first started, you know, just the minimizing your importance to this dialogue, right? And that's what we do as women. That's what we do. I need us to stop that. You know, your voice is just as important as others. And by your stepping out there, you're showing courage, you're showing confidence, you're showing leadership, and it's going to help other women to know that it's okay to do the same thing. That's something that each one of us can do, you know. And I guess to be a speaker and to be vulnerable and to put myself out there for criticism, you know, it's something that today I find very rewarding and very easy to do. 10 years ago, maybe not so much. 20 years ago, when I was growing up, I considered myself shy. And so I would hold back. I would fall back. I was one of six. I wasn't shy. And I was right in the middle. If I didn't, you know, demand for what I needed, I wouldn't have gotten it. And so what I had to really work to develop and being trained as a corporate salesperson really helped me to develop this fact that in New York City, pre-terrorism days, I had, of course, a vertical territory, including the Trade Center, and I was taught to knock on every door, just go into every door. I had lots of companies, small and large, in my territory. And I tell you that was the best learning ground for my confidence, because I wanted to be successful. That was a given. In order to be successful, I had to achieve so many calls, so many appointments, so many orders, so many proposals. It's a numbers game. But opening that door, I never knew what was going to confront me. I always used to say, I never knew what was behind door number three. And I had to steel myself before going in, that no matter what, how I was confronted, that I was going to act like I belong. So now I tell other women, you walk in the room, you sit at the table, and you act like you belong. When you walk in the room and there are chairs around the side, do not sit in the chairs on the wall. Sit at the table and act like you belong, because you do. And the more of us that do that, the more comfortable others will get with that. And the more those who are maybe newer in their roles or more junior or more less confident, the more it will help them to build up their confidence as well. So for us as women, ask for what we want. I learned that in sales too. And again, I've been running a business for 33 years. So this was way before that, when I was really young. So I learned that I'm going to ask for what I want. If it's not exactly what I want, what someone is offering, I'm going to negotiate. And I do that in the most professional, respectful way possible. But if I just take it and go back and be unhappy about it, then I'm not helping. I'm not helping myself. I'm not helping that other person, because you have to teach people how to treat you, right? And if you've done all you can, recognizing you can't die on every hill, you only have one life to live. If you've done all you can and you still don't feel valued, I encourage women to not stay. Don't stay there. Find a place where you, your contribution and your whole authentic self can be valued. And like I said, it's a tight labor market right now. Mm-hmm. So negotiate, speak up, act like you own it.
Mm-hmm. I typically don't have problems with that, but most of my coworkers know.
Good. Good. Well, you started out with, well, I'll step aside. No, you won't. No, not. Yeah. I have a question. That's what you do. Okay, I know we're at 2 o'clock.
Yes,
and I've got to go. I can talk all day, you guys. You know, this. If I had the time, I could talk all day. I really like to engage with people, and so this has been truly a pleasure and an honor for me. But I am late getting on at 2 o'clock.
Yes, Avis, thank you on behalf of everybody, not just everybody that showed up. Thank you too for showing up today, but thank you. And we hope to bring you back. And please get in touch with Avis, or if you want to send additional questions, we can make sure she gets them. But we would love to invite you again soon. And please keep us honest, but also thank you so much. Thank you for... being a bright light in our week.
Oh, thank you, Anna. You know, it's my pleasure. And you know this secret. When you ask, I'll move mountains. If I can do it, I'm there. I'm your girl. Thank you all. Have a good rest of your week.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.